Ron Ananian.
Mechanical things, internal combustion engines always work really well with gasoline in them. So rule number one, always check the gas in the lawnmower, not wearing your sunglasses.
The Car Doctor.
You know what? There's a lot to be said for older vehicles. Sometimes parts are an issue. Sometimes rust is an issue. But if you stay on top of both of that, you know, we can source things and keep things running. And, you know, we know where the faults are in the older vehicles.
Welcome to the radio home of Ron Ananian, The Car Doctor. Since 1991, this is where car owners the world over turn to for their definitive opinion on automotive repair. If your mechanic's giving you a busy signal, pick up the phone and call in. The garage doors are open.
But I am here to take your calls at 855-560-9900.
And now, here's Ronnie.
Hey, hello and welcome. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor, at your service. Let's get over and talk to Ross in Michigan, 08 Jeep Patriot. We're going to move it along this hour. How are you today, Ross? What's going on?
I'm doing good.
What do you got?
I've got a 2008 Jeep Patriot that I've had since day one. It's been, in spite of all the bad reviews they get, it's been a wonderful vehicle for me. Got 273,000 miles on it.
Just
doesn't burn a drop of oil, but so suddenly lights started coming on.
It's just broken in other words. So 300,000 and still climbing. When you say all the lights come on, Ross, you're saying dash lights?
Yeah, I've got the BAS, or is it the BAP,
ESP, BAS warning light on, all-wheel drive light comes on.
Yeah. And then even the transmission light has been coming on, and that'll come on even when the vehicle's ice cold.
Okay.
You know, and then a heat gauge will come on for the transmission. Driving down the street, all of a sudden, sometimes it'll just all of a sudden like drop down. You can't go over 15 miles an hour. And then it'll start running fine again.
Have you had any diagnosis done to it? Any code scanning?
I was on my way to get the scans done the other day, and it dropped down and wouldn't go over 15 miles an hour. So I was only a mile from home. So I turned around and came back, I didn't make it there. But you know, it all started right after someone stole my catalytic converter. And the insurance company replaced it, and it was shortly after that that all the lights started coming on.
Yeah, I mean,
so
unless,
I don't know if that's it.
I'd be pressed to see a connection. You know, mm-hmm. catalytic converter under the vehicle, unless wiring harness got damaged somewhere or something's not tucked in properly. I'm not saying it's not likely, but a replacement mm-hmm. cat's not going to cause this kind of a thing. The engine's still running when the lights come on, correct?
Yes.
Okay. So let's stay with what works, and let's just try to put a mechanic in there and get some diagnosis. So I want a complete scan of all the modules. And what I'm expecting you're going to find is going to be communication fault error codes. All right?
Okay.
Now, you can't do this with an OBD2 scanner. You have to you have to go in year, make, model. You may see some things on OBD2. Let me retract that statement. You may see some things on OBD2, but on a case like this, I want to see everybody. Here's the difference, all right? How many languages do you speak, Ross?
One.
Okay. So cars speak a variety of languages at different speeds, all right? So OBD2, well, here, let's say it like this. You've got a Jeep. Your car speaks Chrysler, all right?
Right.
Chrysler has its operating language and its operating system. And in order to properly interrogate Chrysler language, you need a dealer-level capable scan tool, all right?
Okay.
You need something that will interpret Chrysler language, all right?
Okay.
But as far as the federal government's concerned, you ever look under the hood and you see that decal that says this vehicle meets and exceeds all federal emissions requirements for model year 2008, and every car's got one appropriate to the manufacturer and appropriate to the model
right.
year. Okay, so you know that's the feds, and that's OBD2. Mm-hmm. All right, onboard
right.
diagnostics too. You can go in under onboard diagnostics too, but you're only going to talk to those modules that are directly involved in emission controls and may not necessarily affect the other operation of the vehicle. If you go in and speak, use a scan tool that speaks to Chrysler, you're going to hear everything and everybody. Okay? That was my water bottle I knocked over. So,
okay.
I'm still alive. So you want to go in and scan it. I think what you're going to find is communication faults. And if you do, I want you to pay particular attention to splice S306, which is along the left sill plate near the left kick panel. All right? It comes out of connector 103. Connector 103 power comes down and goes to splice 306. They're known to corrode. They're known to go bad. They're a common known problem on that generation year make model vehicle. So I want you go ahead.
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
Oh, I was going to say, I did take the kick panel off because I had read that online and I wasn't sure. It said the wire would be looped and there would be some tape on it, but I'm not really a mechanic. So
right.
I stopped at that point. I didn't want to
create
any more problems.
Listen, before we disturb anything and possibly change anything, what I would do is I would at least get it scanned. Get it scanned. See what sort of faults come back. One of the things I hate about, diagnosing or working on a vehicle until I've diagnosed it is, do I disturb something and create another secondary problem? So what I want you to do is I want you to get it scanned. I've got communication faults. If Splice 306 is part of those communication networks, then let's go in and take that apart and look at it. But one of my steadfast rules over the past 40 years is no quick fix. Let's go look and let's diagnose one step at a time. Let's find out what's good. Let's find out what's bad and work our way out from there. But think about Splice 306. And after you get it scanned, if you have any more questions, give me a call back, Ross. Let's get on over and talk to Wayne in New Hampshire, 05 Buick LeSabre. And a problem with the blower motor. Wayne, welcome to the Car Doctor, sir. How can I help?
Good afternoon, Ron.
Yes, sir.
The situation started about 2 months ago. All of a sudden, the fan motor didn't work. I tried sliding the knob back and forth and did nothing. All of a sudden, one day I started up, the fan works.
Okay.
Okay, great. Then one day it doesn't. Sometimes it'll go on a three-day run to where it doesn't work. And, a few more days it works, and then it'll arbitrarily quit. I checked the fuse. Okay. Fan motor's fine.
How do you know the fan? How do you know the fan motor's fine?
I hot-wired it.
Okay.
Right off the battery.
All right.
It works great.
Okay.
It's wide open right off the battery. But the dealer recommended I buy a resistor. It was huge. And all of a sudden the fan started working again. So I took that part back. I don't get it.
Well, today it
works great.
So what they're doing is a million years ago when God was young and dirt was invented and I was in high school, blower motors used to work with variable resistors. It was just a simple variable resistor circuit. General Motors decided to elevate that. And, on a 2005 Buick, it's got a computer controlling the voltage going out to the blower motor because it gives more precise control. I guess the fusspots wanted to be able to get the exact amount of air, so the exact amount of control. So all that dash switch is doing is providing a voltage input request, and then all the heavy work is done by the blower motor module, that big piece you bought that's under the dash that's stuffed all the way in the front of the evaporator case right on the passenger side, close to the floor pan.
Right.
That's where they had you pointed, right? So what you really want to do is get a voltmeter and look for voltage input, or tie a voltmeter into the lead going into that module, and the next time it doesn't work, it's simple. Does it have blower input request, yes or no? Is voltage there, yes or no? If it is, then the blower switch is good and you've got no power coming out the other side. The request is there. The command is there, but there's nothing coming out. Then that blower module itself, the control module itself, is bad and that needs to be replaced. If you've got nothing from the blower switch, then you've got to backtrack. But I've got to tell you, more times than not, it was either the module or melted wiring that occurred as a result of high amperage draw out of the blower motor, which also took the blower module out. So don't assume the blower module is good. Fix the why it doesn't turn on every time problem, and then you need to measure current either with a clamp-on amp probe or an inline meter to see what's the amperage draw of that blower motor. And, if it's got high amperage draw, the blower motor itself needs to be replaced too, just from age, because I've seen one affect the other. Do that. Call me back if you need more, Wayne. I'm Ron and Annie and the Car Doctor. We're back right after this.
It's the little old lady from Pasadena.
He drives that way, but when it comes to fixing cars, Ron has car advice done right. 855-560-9900. Here's Ron.
You know, how we communicate is such an integral part of the auto repair process. And I don't know if it's, I don't know if I can really say it's just of the auto repair process or of the process of being human. And there's two stories here to tell you. And I'll tell you the first one first. Jimmy dropped off his Fusion this week. It was due for an oil change. And he was complaining about, he saw it as an oil leak. Hey, Ron, my car's got an oil leak. Can you take a look? And I looked at it, and it did have an oil leak, but it wasn't engine oil. It was trans fluid. It was a trans oil leak. The trans oil cooler lines had rotted under the radiator. They come out of the trans, they go up under the radiator belly pan, and then, you know, as you drive the car, all the wind gets swept up and under, and, you know, they where they tuck up. And they corrode over the years. It's a 10-year-old car going on 11 years and needed trans cooler lines. So that was early in the week. He took the car back. He drove it a little bit. He finally decided, hey, you know what? I want to change it. He brought it back on Friday and put the trans cooler lines in. We ordered the lines. Ford had them in stock. It's a common problem. And, you know, I did trans cooler lines. I also did radiator hoses. And you say to yourself, and Jimmy said it to me, he says, why are we doing radiator hoses in a car that needs trans cooler lines? And I said, well, in order to get the cooler lines off the radiator on the passenger side, it's a little easier if I get the one hose out of the way. The coolant has never been serviced. And, you know, it's the green specialty, you know, 5-year, 10-year, whoever story you want to believe. I got a story about Ford coolant we'll tell in the next couple of weeks that will knock your socks off. And, you know, let's just do hoses. They're going to be hard. All right, do what you think is best, Ron. You know best. Okay, take the car apart, do the trans oil cooler lines, do the radiator hoses. The radiator hoses were hard as a rock, like I expected, and the job went together fine. Jimmy came to pick the car up, and I explained to him, I said, everything is done. You know, the cooler lines are done, the coolant is done, and the radiator hoses are done, and you'll see a couple little drips and drops off the belly pan where the cooler lines were leaking, but they'll go away in time. I wiped down everything as good as I could. And he said, well, what about the engine oil leak? Or what about the oil leak? And I said, what oil leak? And he said, well, didn't it have an oil leak too? He said, but you know, I'm a little confused. And I explained to him again. I said, Jimmy, you keep saying it's an oil leak. You're thinking engine oil. I'm hearing oil leak and it's trans oil. And I realized in our communication, it's on me. I failed to distinguish between which oil we're talking about. And I realized, you know, the art form of communication and being exact in what's exactly going on is just very, very important. And it affects the repair process and it affects our communication as human beings. And he said, great. He says, now I understand. He goes, now I know why you were so concerned, because the end of the story was, I said, by the way, you were down 2.5 quarts of trans fluid. And I said, at the rate you were going, you were going to burn up the trans. And he said, now I understand why you were saying that the last time, because I told him he was going to hurt the trans if he drove it with cooler lines leaking. He said, I couldn't make the connection between engine oil cooler or engine oil leaking and a transmission failure. He said, now I understand. It had nothing to do with, right, it had nothing to do with engine leak. It was trans leak that was affecting and causing the trans fluid to get lost. Now, I told you that story to tell you this one. So the other day, my wife and I are texting. And it's about, you know, are you going here? Can you pick this up? You know, the usual stuff that people, you know, communicate back and forth to each other during the course of the day. And as it turned out, the last text she had sent me required a yes or no answer. And when she initially texted me, she was walking. But by the time I got around to answering, she was driving. And her Ford Explorer will take that text and announce it. So 15 minutes later, she gets a reply to her first text. The answer is yes. Just yes, no explanation. Now, she pulled over, she read the text, and she texted me back, yes, what? Because, you know, at that point, she was a little confused, and she actually then reached out and called me, and she said, did you mean to reply yes? And, you know, it was this conversation between two people that have lived together for 40 years, and I couldn't understand what her confusion was. And then I realized she's hearing it through the dashboard of the car, not looking at the phone, which prompted her to call me back to talk about what exactly the car was trying to say. And it made me stop to realize that all these text messages, it would have been easier if I had said, yes, I can pick that up. It was just a simple, you know, misunderstanding. But the point is, as in my conversation with Jimmy and the fusion and oil leaks, you know, not all oil is engine oil. Sometimes it's trans fluid. Sometimes it's power steering oil. Sometimes it's coolant, because coolant gives an oily appearance to it. In our conversations with each other, in our conversations with mechanics, with each other as human beings, in our daily interaction, clear communication is just so important. And the car is mandating that, because the car is taking its text messaging and it's now making it so that we're now all getting used to, as human beings, there's a psychological side to this, we're all getting used to the ability of the car to decipher and just display words. And if we're not careful how we say it or what we say, the words aren't going to make any sense, and then everybody's going to be confused. Are we talking about engine oil, trans oil, or did you send the text to the wrong person? And I thought it was important. I just wanted to make that point that, you know, sometimes that late text or that incomplete text is going to be something that leads to a potential problem. And, you know, just be mindful of what you're doing as technology marches forward, right? We're trying to march technology forward so that we don't text and drive, which we shouldn't do. So now we're listening to it, right? The text is being displayed, but if it's not a clear, concise message, that creates an issue too. Maybe we should go back to smoke signals.
Huh? Is that I'm going to have to get you a stake to put over your eye one of these days.
Why is that?
Because the missus is going to give you a black eye when you answer wrong.
Well, you know, Tom, but Tom, you get it, right?
Oh yeah.
It's just a simple thing, right? How many times do you tell Mrs. Tom, hey, yes, no, right, go, stop. But you can't do that anymore. The technology of the car.
I'm the one who's normally driving, so I'm the one who gets the word 10 minutes later going to go, huh?
Right. So it really should say, yes, I can pick that up. And the point becomes the car is forcing us, the technology and the car is forcing us to change the way we talk to each other. And it may not necessarily be a bad thing. Hey, Tom, coming up next, you know who's in the studio waiting to go? Is Bob Boma. He is the Director of Engineering and Advanced Technologies for Goodyear Brakes. I had a great conversation with Bob prior to the show today about brakes and what Goodyear Brakes is doing, improving the brake systems. But just a general conversation we're going to have with Bob, talking about brakes, how to make sure they're safe. We're getting into the fall driving season and things to look forward to. And there's more information about Goodyear Brakes at GoodyearBrakes.com. So that's coming up next. Don't you go away. I'm Ron Ananian, and the Car Doctor will return right after this. And by the way, welcome back. One of the first things I learned as a young mechanic is there's some key critical areas in cars. Cars got to have good tires. It's got to have good front end and steering, suspension components. And probably the most important are brakes. You know, the brakes are, we just assume they're going to stop and work, and we just get in the car and we don't give it a second thought. And how many times a day are you on that brake pedal? And I want to try and drive that point home now because, you know, we're at that stage where the weather's changing. We're going to be getting into, you know, poor road conditions as we go into autumn and winter driving. And brakes are a year-round thing, but I want you to get you to start thinking about it now. And I've asked Bob Boma. He is the Director of Engineering and Advanced Technologies for Goodyear Brakes to stop by. And Bob's with us today. And we're going to chat a little bit about brakes. I want you to get some education. Bob, welcome aboard, sir.
Thank you, Ron.
You know, temperatures are dropping, right? And right? And there's some,
absolutely. It's getting cold.
And there's some things that people need to start thinking about. What can they do to their vehicle's brake systems to make sure they're ready for, you know, cold weather, not just necessarily winter, but cold weather driving?
Well, the number one thing is make sure you inspect your brake system. It's very good to know the quality of your brake pads, whether or not you have life left, what the corrosion status is of your brake system. Like you said, we all take it for granted, and there's nothing worse than to have that 10-degree below zero day, and all of a sudden you're hearing a massive grinding.
And, you know, some of the warning signs with brakes, to me, what my 40-plus years has taught me is that they'll come in complaining about a little bit of a squeak noise, and somebody will look at the brake pads and say, well, it's got pad life, but there's a rust ridge around the end of the rotor. And you can see that that rust is starting to pocket and get scalloped, and that's beating up the pad, and that's affecting pad life, right?
That is correct.
And then they've got a vehicle that doesn't stop as efficiently, or worse. How many times, Bob, have you seen where the brake rotor has some rust on the face, and now instead of having that 2-inch-wide swath of brake pad area, they're now down to 50% because the rotor is rusted? There's a term for that. Is it delamination? Is that the word I'm thinking of?
Delamination is when your brake pad comes off of the backing plate. When you are dealing with the corrosion on your rotor, basically what you're doing is you're creating a file. The iron oxide on your rotor is much harder than the brake pad material, and you're prematurely wearing your brake pad away, and that will reduce your lining life. It will reduce the safety of your vehicle, and it's overall not a good condition.
So suffice it to say that, you know, the signs that it's time to replace the brakes are what? Noise, pulse, what am I missing?
Noise, Bob? Noise and roughness are your two greatest concerns. If you're rotating your tires, if you inspect your brakes and you find out that your brakes are not sliding freely, or your brake pads are stuck in your bracket and they're not sliding freely, those are also signs that you need some brake service done.
You know, over the last, I have to say, 5 to 7 years, it seems that they're putting more and more corrosion. I'm trying to think of the right word, you know, to melt the snow and the ice, more corrosive material on the roads. And it's affecting the way the cars, you know, the chassis are affected. And it's affecting brakes, right? You know, that spray gets on calipers, gets on rotors. And there's an anti-corrosion movement in the brake industry. And one of the things I was reading about Goodyear, and that's why I really reached out to you guys today, is the fact that you're taking some big steps to fight corrosion with brakes, right? You've got a new line of premium quality brakes. And what's going to make your brakes different than the next guy? Because I know there's a lot.
That's a great question, Ron. At GoodyearBrakes.com, we offer bundles. A bundle includes a caliper, a rotor, and brake pads, and you can buy each of the individual components on their own. But our system, our calipers are remanufactured with a proprietary Anti-Ox Max coating, which protects the caliper assembly from corrosion. The same can be said with our rotors. Our rotors are CNC machined to OE specifications. And once again, we 100% coat them in our Anti-Ox Max coating. These are zinc-rich coatings that reduce rusting and give you long life. And our brake pads are premium quality products. They are 100% manufactured in North America. And we 100% powder coat our brake pad assembly after we mold the friction material to the backing plate to protect the backing plate, and more importantly, to protect the interface between the friction material and the backing plate so corrosion doesn't get in there. At the same time, we use a vulcanized rubber insulating shim, and it's very interesting due to the fact that we chose a vulcanized rubber because, as everyone knows, Charles Goodyear invented the vulcanization process.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's still, you know, technology carries technology forward in a sense, Bob, right? You guys are still, Goodyear Brakes, they're still inventing new ways to make things better. Is there you know, I look at brakes and I always think about brakes. You know, probably I see 2-3 salesmen a month in the shop, and they're always telling me, hey, my brakes are great. My brakes are, you know, the best because. So for the consumer, how does the consumer know? You know, can you give us, three pieces of advice, something the folks can consider to get started on their next brake replacement project, whether they're doing it or whether they're going into a shop and say, hey, can you do this for me? You know, what are the things they should look for? Because let's face it, there's that, you know, the brake market, there's that white box brake pad, okay, and then there's that quality brake pad like a Goodyear brake. How do the folks tell the difference?
Well, your question is very good, Ron, and it's very difficult for the average consumer to do that. 100% of our GoodyearBrakes.com brake pads are manufactured in North America. And we only provide premium quality products. When you go to other locations, you may or may not be getting a North American made product, and you may or may not know who's manufacturing it. So the quality of the ingredients in the brake pad is where the rubber meets the road. And our 100% North American-made product is tested in North America, in our labs, in our vehicle test centers, and at third-party test centers in the United States. We have over 50 years of friction material engineering experience to draw down on, and that's what separates GoodyearBrakes.com from our competition.
And that's what the listeners really need to be aware of. You know, real quick before we go, Bob, And I thank you for your time today. One of the things you and I talked about, and we'll just talk about it here on air, we talked about this pre-interview, was the fact that your calipers, you're taking strides to ensure that the calipers all have the right bleeder screws in it. Bob and I, folks, everybody should know this. Bob and I had a conversation before the show today, right? We talked about bleeder screws and calipers and how we want them all to be the same size hex nut, and they all want to be, so it's easier on the mechanic doing the job, right?
That's correct. There's nothing worse than having to look for a 3/8-inch wrench, a 10-millimeter, a 12-millimeter, and having them all different when you're working.
Yeah, it makes you crazy. Bob, I thank you for your time, sir. You're just a fountain of knowledge. We're going to bring you back. We've got more to talk about, I'm sure. Time is going to take us today. Where can the listeners go get more information?
The best way to find out about Goodyear Brakes is to go to GoodyearBrakes.com. All of our information is listed there. We also have videos for the DIY person to help you do a proper brake job.
Great. Good deal. Thanks, Bob. You have a great rest of the day, and we thank you for your time once again.
Great. Thank you, Ron. It's been a pleasure.
You're very welcome. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. Again, I want to thank Bob Boma and the folks over at Goodyear Brake for taking the time today. Great interview. I was actually in on their press conference they had a couple of days ago. I'm curious because for somebody to come out with brakes, you got to understand there's so many brake manufacturers out there, and there's so many places to pick and choose from. And, you know, not all of them are good. They're just selling a product. They're not selling a solution. And one of the things I saw in the press conference at Goodyear Brake was they're selling a solution. They see the corrosive problem that brakes are having. They're seeing the issue, and they're doing something to resolve it. Because, you know, if you're up in Maine and you're driving your car year round, or in other states that have so much corrosion issues, and you don't have to have snow to have the problem, but you get it. They're not just selling brakes. They're trying to sell brakes better, or better brakes, as it were. And that's what I got out of them at their press conference. And that's what I really was impressed by. And that's, you know, one of the reasons we had Bob on the show today. He's a really, you know, if you're a car person, he's a really great guy to sit and talk to, because, boy, you can pick his brain. There's a lot of stuff in the attic with that guy, and just a pleasure. So we're going to have him back once again. I wonder, you know, how do I approach this topic? It's something Tom brought up to me during the week, and he put a picture up on Facebook about Unearth My First Car, and you saw the Fred Flintstone mobile up there. And I guess I should tell the story this way. I remember in 1972, my best buddy and car fixer, right, Russell, was going to go to trade school. He was going to go to Lincoln Tech, the mechanical school here in New Jersey. and he didn't have a car. And his dad helped him buy a Volkswagen, a 72, must have been 73 when we did this. Yeah, 73, 74. I take that back. But it was a 72 Super Beetle because it was 2 years old. It was a 72 Volkswagen Super Beetle, as I recall, and I could be off a year. And I remember Russell's father, I remember Mr. Kogi saying, you know, no modifications, Russell, no changes, because Russell and I had a way of, you know, anything anybody gave us, we'd have to modify it to make it go faster, look better, chrome wheels, something, right? We had to change something about the car. Don't worry, Dad, it'll be bone stock. I'll get back and forth to college. Well, about 2 weeks later, the exhaust system came off. About 3 weeks later, the stereo went in. About 4 weeks later, the carburetor was changed. And, I mean, just we were always tinkering. And that was Russell's first real car. And when Russell got rid of that car, by the time he sold that car 6 years later, it had been lowered, chopped. I mean, we actually cut the roof off the car and took 3 inches of steel out of it. We actually chopped the Volkswagen Beetle. It was the coolest thing in the world. And you could only do it to the first-year Super Beetle because the first-year Super Beetle was the only year Super Beetle that had a flat windshield. So it was easy enough to get a flat windshield made for a couple of, you know, high school, college kids on a budget. We could just take it to a glass shop and say, cut a piece of glass this big. We made a cardboard template, and then we set it on. Now, I remember that. And the experiences of that first car, right? And eventually the bug kind of went its way. And, you know, I remembered the first car scenario because Russell sent me a text this morning. He's now in North Carolina. And, you know, it's no secret. I found a 72 Chevy Monte Carlo, which is the same car I commuted to college in and put almost 400,000 miles on. And, you know, you go back to your roots, right? You always go back to what you had. And you just there's just that emotional connection to that time period in your life growing up. And Russell sends me a text this morning. He goes, uh-oh, it's back. And it's a 72-3 Volkswagen Super Beetle on a trailer. And I can only imagine what that car is going to look like in 2 weeks as he goes through the motions again. And I guess the point becomes that thank God I lived when I lived and I had the cars that I had, because I know that 25 or 30 years from now, nobody's going to say, man, I had this really cool 2018 Honda Accord, and I went to college in it. They're going to think, it got me back and forth, but nobody's going to chop and channel it and make it look really cool and blast through the streets of New York at 3 o'clock in the morning, which is a story for another time. 855-560-9900. You go, Russell. You go. I'm Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. I'll be back right after this. Welcome back, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. A couple of things. Make sure you check us out on Facebook, Ron Ananian, the Car Doctor. And I want to thank everybody out there today that's their comments and thoughts about what this radio show is about today. And always good to talk to everybody via Facebook. So we are out on Facebook. The Car Doctor phone number is 855-560-9900. Sometimes I say that fast. People tell me, you know, Ron, you say that awful fast. Yeah, I know. Listen, come to New Jersey and try and relax and calm down, and you'll understand why everything seems to be faster than it actually is. It just seems to be the normal course of things and how things take back. But I apologize. But, yeah, that is the phone number. And the way it works, because we are picking up quite a few affiliates now as the show continues to expand and evolve, you can call 855-560-9900 and leave a message. There's a 24/7 answering machine service set up. And leave a message. The show is live on the network. You have to think a little out of the box here, okay? The radio show is live Saturday afternoons, 2 to 4 p.m. East Coast time, all right? I always had to explain this to my mom, God bless her. She never could understand how we would listen to the show on Sunday, because there was an affiliate in New Jersey that carried the show on Sunday, and how I could be in the car with her and the show would be on the radio at the same time. She thought that was the greatest trick in the world. And I don't think she still understood it till the day she passed. You know, that's the deal. That's how it works. You can call 855-560-9900. Leave a message. Tom Ray, very nice man, my executive producer, chief engineer, and compadre, will call you back and put you in the queue. And be nice to Tom. You know what? If Tom says he's going to call, be there. don't waste this time, because there's too many calls and too many people we've got to talk to. We're just trying to help everybody fix cars, and that's just so very, very important. I want to touch on scan tools if I can real quick. We had a couple of calls in the last 2 hours talking about scan tools and asking about, you know, how do you pick one and what do you look for? And, you know, I think there's a few scan tools on the market today to look at, and I think the company to really watch that's growing in leaps and bounds, just like the Car Doctor, is Autel. Autel is zooming to the top of the charts in popularity for a lot of reasons. And one of the reasons is the simplicity of the tool. All right. They've been around a good long time. They've got a good solid team of engineers that are doing what they need to do. But you start to look at their ability to transpose information out to the car. I was reading the scan tool I've got in front of me. I've got a Autel MaxiCheck MX808 in studio that just sits on my desk, and I play with it during the week to kind of get familiar with it. They've got Citroen, Vauxhall, Mini, Volkswagen, Bugatti, Saab. They've got all the oddballs plus all the regulars. And to me, that's what makes Autel the winner and something worth looking at. MX808, check them out online at autel.com, I believe it is. I'm Ron Ananian and the Car Doctor. Till the next time, reminding you, good mechanics aren't expensive. They're priceless. See ya.